previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Chris Saliza joins us. And Chris, I should say that Ryan Weir of Buffalo, New York writes, "I am one of the few littles who is missing Saliza on a regular basis." So you should feel good about that.
Yeah, that's a plan.
Yeah. We ask.
I know that guy. He's my brother-in-law.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Okay, I'm not going to say that we are back to normalcy on any level with this show. But we are doing a third show this week that is prompted by the fact that there was the NFL draft and something very specific to talk about. I'm happy to do that. Also, for the first time, Michael is back on the show. Michael is 6 feet away from me at the end of a table, the end of the table that I am on. We have a microphone for him, should he choose to use it or come over again. And Nigel can hear us, so we can do, for the first time, we can do an actual opening. How do you feel about that?
You slandered me the other day saying I wouldn't support you when an unnamed woman approached you without announcing herself.
Right.
So I arrived today. You have your mic set up, which is at the end of the table, which is where you always do your note-taking, and you write letters, and you write, actually you write in your diary every night. We set up my mic, and you just go, "No, too close. Too close."
Well, I want you to...
You push it to the end of the table, so we are fully social distancing.
Right.
And it actually feels like we're doing the Seder that never was this year.
No, there was not one this year. But I'm really happy that you're here. Nigel, you can hear us. You can join in. Am I correct?
That's right. I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. So
I'm fully convinced that if I go upstairs, my bedroom will be set up, freshly washed sheets, and you're just going to ask me to move in.
You can move in, and you can take care of your aging parents. For those of you who don't know who are planning a trip this weekend, George is open if you need tattoos. You can get a tattoo. You can go to a gym. You can get your nails done. You can get your
hair
cut. And you can go bowling. The bowling is the one where I thought, well, if there's 40 lanes and you only use 10 lanes, you could probably get away with bowling.
What about the shoes?
I don't know about the shoes, and I don't know about the ball as well. You probably have to use only your own ball, and you have to make sure the ball is cleaned. But the tattoo parlors, even Donald Trump said this was a bad idea. This is a direct quote. "I'm not happy about Brian Kemp." Brian Kemp is the governor of Georgia. And Trump, and I watch this because I watch every night like a moth to a flame. I watch that press conference every single time it's on, hoping that either Deborah Birx or Anthony Fauci will say, "What are you talking about?" But Donald Trump said of a Republican governor, "It was a bad idea to do this, and I'm not happy about Brian Kemp." So I thought that was in the news. I didn't want to necessarily start that way because it leads to the question of who feels safe. And fewer than 50% of the country does feel safe even at the moment. But I did have a few emails that I thought we could talk about. Just to begin, one is from Alejandro Rosenberg in Northwest D.C. who writes, "A quarantine question for Michael. Is it sweatpants or sweatpant? No S. I want to be grammatically sound for my next Zoom call. Keeping up some semblance of the regular routine is crucial these days, so I echo others who've written in to thank you for continuing to pod." Sweatpants or sweatpant?
Well, it's 2020, so we're going straight to jogger, the jogger pant.
Okay, so it's a pant.
Yeah, dress it up, dress it down. It's good for those work-from-home calls.
Okay, this is one to me, then we have one to Nigel. This is from Linda McFarlane. And Linda McFarlane writes, "I love watching Tony and Michael each day on TSN here in Canada." As we're doing faux PTI. We're doing 15, 16 minutes of content, but it doesn't say PTI. It just brings us on. She says, "Keep up the great work. I was wondering what is the painting that is behind Tony while he is in his attic. Looks like a canoe being paddled." Indeed,
right.
It is. It is a plaque. It is a camp plaque. It is from something called Color War. Color War is not... It's not as bad or malevolent as it sounds. Color war, in the tradition of sleepaway camps, color war would take the two colors of your camp. In our case, it was blue and white. Everybody had two colors, you know, yellow and red, green and white, whatever it is, blue and yellow. It doesn't matter. And every single camper would be divided into those teams. And those teams would have a theme. Now, I'm going back, in this case, to 1957, long before most of the listeners were born who listened to this show. And the theme that year was the blue Indians against the white pioneers. And one of the things you had to do was compose some original songs for your team. You had to do a plaque for your team. This is the silhouette of an Indian on a lake paddling a canoe. And I have had this for a million years, and I put it behind me. I also have the Blue Hawaiians from Camp Kiyuma from 1955. But I can't get that to stand in a way, the bottom of it where it says Blue Hawaiians would actually break off. I can't get it to stand. So we've used Blue Indians. That's being replaced this coming week by another picture from one of my books in the hopes that I could sell the book and Steve the Sycophant could track me as I go into the top 40,000 or something like that.
Now, every camp had its own version of this. So yes. Color Wars, the traditional, my camp had Paul Bunyan Day.
Yeah. Well, ours was 4 or 5 days of athletic and social competition. And it was a really big deal. It came at the end of the year. It was a really, really big deal. And I saved two of the plaques. I just went up there 1 year. And actually, when I say I saved them, I mean I stole them.
Well, your uncle owned the camp.
My uncle owned the camp. I stole them and I brought them home, so I was very happy about
that.
Can
I just share one more story about the artwork behind you on PTI? So this,
Of it is Carol's paintings.
I know. I want to give Carol credit. There was one day where she had a painting behind you, and she also had the painting that was behind Mike from out in Arizona.
Yes, but that was, it turns out that was not Carol's painting. That was a local artist there. Mike had left that painting, the exact style of Carol. Michael had left Carol's painting in Bethesda, and that was a local, because I asked him about that. I asked Wilbon about that.
I think my version's better.
Here's yours, is much better. From Todd Sanzone in Bristow, Virginia. Dear Dr. Ronnie Quarantine, I just want to clear something up, as it is possible I heard you wrong. Did you say Nigel comes over and he brings the email? As in physically drives to your house and hands you printed copies of email. Surely this can't be the case since, hello, they're email. E as in electronic. Again, I could have misheard you. Please tell me I misheard you. Nigel, do you want to clarify that?
Well, we know your challenges with various forms of technology like ATM machines and computer printers, really. So we just took that problem out of it. And allows me the chance to sort of see you every morning. Plus, I've got to pick up the bagels anyways, so I'm coming by. So it's all easy.
So plug Bethesda Bagels right now. Plug them. Plug Danny.
Absolutely. Yes, Bethesda Bagels are open every single day from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Located at 4819 Bethesda Avenue. They do a great job. They've done a terrific job of getting us supplied throughout this thing. Go by and see them and get whatever you need. BethesdaBagels.com.
Now, Nigel's a scary presence on the road just on a normal day.
But now he's got a mask.
He's now wearing a mask that makes him look like he's in Mad Max or a smoker in Waterworld.
It's very scary. Just to clarify this for Mr. Todd Sanzone in Bristow, Virginia, I could probably print these emails myself if I knew how to do that, but I don't know how to print them. So they are delivered and I read them. I'm glad that Michael is here and we're doing a regular open. Because there is one sporting event that is apparently etched in stone, and that is the exhibition match for a second straight year between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, and the added wondrous pairing of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. I think this will definitely happen, but I have doubts about the rest of the tour events that are scheduled for early June.
I'm in agreement with you. I think if you look at the tour's release, this is purely just to try and placate and try and make the local communities that get so much from tour stops something, even if it's just for the community newspaper, something along those lines. But the match between Tiger and Phil, the addition of Brady and Manning, they had a lot of pushback, a lot of people saying it's disrespectful and irresponsible to have any sports in this time. And I think
I disagree.
I do as well. And I think they listened to that. And that's why they were a little slow to release this match. I think they also listened to the criticism from the match from Thanksgiving 2 years ago because the golf was really boring.
Yep.
There wasn't any actual, you know, side action.
Well, Tiger doesn't respond to being an entertainer.
And frankly, the course didn't play to that. There were a lot of walks between greens to tease. It felt like you were watching a two ball play a very slow match. It got a little exciting with the forced playoff finish, but it wasn't very fulfilling. Look, there's been a lot of talk of side games going on in Florida, say 15 to 20 tour pros carrying their own bags, putting down their own cash. I think this is a safe way to do it, but there are some things I want to see. I don't want this to look like a PGA Tour event. I don't want them to be playing from 7,300 yards for the pros. I want them from the same tees as Brady and Manning. Both can hit the ball, both can play. I want to see more birdies and pars. I want to see them taking on par fours, trying shots you'd never see them trying. because I think that'll show what it really is. It's an exhibition. This is what you saw during wartime with tour players going around city to city doing exhibitions. Let them exhibit a skill that we've never really seen them do.
And it's all for charity. So
it's all for charity. I want to see them throwing down their own cash, and I want to see them getting outside of their expected sort of norms. You say Tiger's not a talker. Okay, let's see him run a route. Who can run a better route between Tiger and Phil? I want to see Phil put on a helmet, do some blocking.
You think they should catch passes?
They have to do something.
Well, that would be great.
They're not doing that Dr. Pepper challenge from 10 yards out. How many times can Tiger and Phil throw a football through a hoop? That is what you can do in between the golf shots to try and make this work.
What a good idea. You should be the producer of it. You should call TNT and say, here are my ideas.
And then we can see them cry as they get a scholarship.
Do you think the Ryder Cup will take place? Rory McIlroy said, if we're not going to have fans, just push it a year.
So this is, I think, where you have to look at what the Ryder Cup has become versus what it was and what it could be again. It was an exhibition. It was a way to showcase golfers that you didn't necessarily see because they lived across the pond. The Golf Channel's done this great thing where they're showing a lot of, I would say, big Ryder Cups, and big in that they were turning points. You see the 1991 War by the Shore, where all the interviews and all the quotes just say, lines were crossed, and I'm sure 30 years later, people are regretting some of their decisions. They're not naming names, but some people were coughing in backswings. You looked at 1999 with the Justin Leonard putt. I think, if nothing else has opened up in terms of sports, the still shots alone of a near empty Whistling Straits at the end of September as fall is overtaking the country, and the symbolism of fall and what we have lost from this spring through the summer, that would be chilling to see against the backdrop of the beautiful Lake Michigan. So I think you might feel differently if you get closer to September. If it feels like you've been able to get these majors in and it's a week and a half after playing the U.S. Open, it might feel forced to try and play that exhibition because it would just feel a bit like a money grab. But again, you have to remember, what could that look like for the country?
It's interesting. I hadn't thought of what you're saying. And this is not even a pushback. I don't think they should play the Ryder Cup between majors. In other words, the last event on the schedule would be the Masters in November. And I don't know that to sort of sandwich the Ryder Cup in cheapens it a little bit to me. But it's somebody else's decision.
No, I definitely hear that. And that's why think about this. The possibility of having two Masters between November and then the following April is something you can never think about. And if you look, if these majors go on, and again, that's a big if, you could see a player emerge, sort of what Brooks Koepka did a couple years ago, where you just ride the wave and you could pick up two or three, which is a career-changing and a generation-changing number of majors to possibly win.
How are Bootsy and the Hammer?
The Hammer is showcasing proclivities his brother never. He's pulling up on everything. He's trying to get into every toy with his brother. Bootsy is afraid. He doesn't want to leave the house. He's at that age where everything is imaginary and world building. So he can sit down and play Legos for an hour. He can do fire rescue for an hour, or he'll just sit playing with gravel doing construction. But you try and get outside, go on walks. He doesn't want to scoot outside of our narrow driveway. We are in a semi-detached row house in D.C. with, a 25-foot driveway? He just goes back and forth. We're sprinting lines at the end of the day.
Wow.
That made it sound a lot bleaker than it is.
Yes.
He's so happy.
When he comes over here and he hits golf balls, he's a very happy boy.
Now, you asked everyone else the last couple of weeks, what's one thing that's really surprised you about this forced time off? And it's, at least once a day, I'm with one of the two boys because they have to take naps or they have to rest. And to just have those quiet moments as you see a little kid falling off to sleep is very peaceful, and it's just affirming about family.
You should come over here and watch your father take a nap on the couch like an old dog.
I'm worried about
and it will
you
be
and
very
naps.
Life-affirming.
And you're also losing weight.
I am losing weight. I don't know what's going
Not
on.
Not to mention you're
shrinking. All right, we'll take a break. We will come back. Is it who's first, Freeman or Aldridge?
Mike Freeman first.
Freeman of Bleacher Report will join us and talk about the draft. The draft, I watched about an hour. I was happy. It made me happy, I have to say, and it doesn't usually, and it made me happy. I didn't care about it, but it made me happy. So we'll take a break, come back with Mike Freeman. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's the bespoke post ad. If your mailbox is anything like mine, 90% of the time it's a fairly depressing place. political flyers, utility bills, unholy amounts of coupons. But once a month, I do have a reason to be stoked, and that's because of my box of awesome from Bespoke Post. Bespoke Post sends guys only the best stuff every month, and no matter what you're into, Box of Awesome has you covered. From style and grooming goods to barware to cooking tools to outdoor gear, Box of Awesome has carefully built collections for every part of your life. Cooking gear, as I now, Michael, get back into cooking. I cooked hamburgers last night. I am cooking now.
I'm like a frontier man using that cast iron Dutch oven they sent over about a year ago, making bread, stews,
bean
soup.
So this is a good time if you're pretty much at home and after a while you say to yourself, I'm tired of this other person in my house cooking. I'm going to cook. That's really good stuff.
Don't forget the paprika.
If they send you cooking tools, it's really good. To get started, take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. Your answers will help them pick the right box of awesome for you. They release new boxes every month across a ton of different categories. It's easy to sign up. It's free to sign up. And you can skip a month or cancel anytime. Each box costs $45 but has over $70 worth of gear inside. You can get 20% off your first monthly box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and you enter the code Tony at checkout. Nigel, what should they do?
Use the bloody code.
Use the code. That's boxofawesome.com, code Tony, for 20% off your first box.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Nigel, is this the one from Chris Monty in Toronto?
That's right. This is the jaunt, I believe.
Okay. So Chris Monty writes, my niece's husband's band has just released their debut album on Thursday, April 16th. You've graciously played tracks by Jaunt, J-A-U-N-T, in the past, Hello and Intimate Sunset. If you would play Baker's Moves from Jaunt's new album, All in One, it'd be greatly appreciated. The album can be found in all the usual spots, and thank you for continuing the podcast and help lifting the spirits up for all the little. So this is Jaunt, and it is called Baker's Moves. All the music. Nigel, you said that we are being flooded with music, and it's wonderful, right?
We really are. Now, we're going to vary from it today and play a little Old Guy Radio with something special. But so many great songs being sent into jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com. And he said it's his, you know, a relative is in the band, but that relative emailed us with the permission. So just make sure you got permission from the artist before you send it in.
Mike Freeman joins us now from Bleacher Report. And before we went on the air, I said to Freeman that I watched about an hour, a little bit more than an hour. And I was awed by the NFL and how well they put this together and how compelling it was to watch, not only because it's the only sporting event, even though it's not real sports, it's the only sporting event out there, but the note that they struck, the sort of hopeful note, the fact that they allowed the players all allowed the cameras in, it was just... You know, there was no embarrassment to it. It was, here's how we cope with what's going on. And for those of you, and I'll put this in a form of a question to Mike, but if you think that the NBA and the NHL and baseball can do this well, you're simply wrong. Am I right on this, Freeman, that the NFL's just better than everybody?
They pulled off, I thought, something that was really difficult to do. And they pulled it off extremely well. And I agree with you. There are very few, if no other, leagues. There's a lot of companies that do this all the time, but I have a hard time doing this on the fly. There were moments that were just genuinely touching. Some were very corny. Some were hilarious. Like in Vrabel's house, there's a dude on the toilet, you know? and so there was, but even that stuff was like, it was funny. You didn't laugh at it. You just sort of like, that's hilarious, because you sort of expected stuff like that. There was all kinds of crazy stuff, but it all really worked out incredibly well. Goodell was a bit corny, but even he was at times was pretty good. I mean, the part you talk about how they let the players in the house is really, the players let the TV in the house, let the cameras in the house is really important. Like they went along with this. It just really... They had fun with it, and they welcomed the cameras in, and it looked genuine. It looked real. You know how canned the NFL is. You know how phony it can be at times, and none of it looked like that. It looked like it was just sort of what it was. They put this together on the fly, and they did the best they could, and it turned out pretty great. I was expecting much worse, and they did something that I thought was one of the best things they've done in a long time. I thought it was tremendous.
Baseball can't do this because of the tensions between the players and the management in baseball. Hockey can't do this because it's just not in their DNA. It's not anything that they would do. Hockey players don't crave the spotlight in quite the same way. Basketball can't do this because the players themselves have so much power that they would just say, no, we're going to do what we want to do. But football in this case was a benevolent dictatorship, which it is. I mean, football is a strong arm commissioner, and he tells everybody what to do. But in this case, I'm going to use a terrible word here. They have my gratitude, Mike. I thought it was awesome. I did.
I agree with you, and I didn't think I would feel that way. Going in, I thought, there's 20 million people who lost their jobs. We're closing in on 50,000 dead in America. I thought this was a little bit crude to do it now, I thought they should wait a little bit, and I was dead wrong. I mean, I was dead wrong. You can still argue about whether or not it should have happened. I think it should have, because of the way they did it. They struck the perfect tone.
Yes.
And it was a sincere production. You got to see, the juxtaposition of guys who are going to make millions with people with millions losing their jobs is still kind of, to me, at least striking, but it was just really almost special to watch guys. We see guys celebrate, and we see guys when they're drafted, they're very happy. They hug their parents. This felt especially like we needed to see this now. And that's where I was wrong. I think people really needed to see something hopeful, and the NFL really kind of provided it. I mean, and I can't believe I said that the NFL provided something hopeful, because they are so cynical at times and so selfish, the league, not the players. But that's what they did. They provided just a really momentary break, and they did it in a classy way that really was inspirational in a lot of ways.
I agree with this. I mean, I have gone on the PTI show, and I have called for Roger Goodell to be fired. I've done this more than once, more than twice, more than 15 times for things that I think are inexcusable. And that's why I'm saying, and Freeman has done the same thing. They did it great last night. They did. They did it great. What would you say was the number one, from a football standpoint, was there a number one overall headline to you?
I think it was the Packers drafting Jordan Love. Aaron Rodgers is a world-class grudge holder, so he will not take to this well with them drafting a quarterback. But I think that was one of the more shocking moments because, Aaron Rodgers he's 36, I believe. That used to be really crazy old in the NFL. Now it's not. He's still got a lot of years left. So in some ways, it was a little bit shocking. In other ways, the Packers are doing what they always do. They're always thinking a little bit down the road, and they think they did this with Brett Favre when they brought in Aaron Rodgers. So that was a little surprising. I still think I'm surprised the Bengals didn't screw it up, and they took the guy they should take, and they were always going to take him, and they never wavered about trading him ever. They were always going to take him. They took him. The Dolphins taking Tua, I thought, was really good. I thought they had one of the best drafts of anyone last night. Pretty much everything went, Tony, as we kind of thought it would go. There was no real shocking move. There was no huge move up by team. It was a pretty standard draft, we thought. And it went kind of as planned.
Let me go back to Love and Rodgers. The thing about the quarterback, Love, is that he had a real good junior year. He had a real bad senior year. People who like him will say his personnel was not nearly as good. People who don't like him will say he throws too many picks and he doesn't know what he's doing. Let's just leave that to the side for a second. I remember when Aaron Rodgers was drafted, and I remember how much he resented Brett Favre for never helping him at all, not one time. Aaron Rodgers has now reached the point in his career where he is Brett Favre. He's a Hall of Fame quarterback with a Super Bowl ring. Will he be kinder to Love than Favre was to him?
I think the answer is definitely yes. I know Aaron Rodgers pretty well. I've gotten to know him over the last 4 or 5 years.
He's one of the smartest guys out there.
Very smart, just incredibly talented. And one of these guys who, like I said, though, he's a world-class grudge holder, but he will not hold the grudge against Jordan Love.
It'll be against the team.
Right.
Yeah.
So he will be, when it comes to situations like this, he's an incredibly classy guy. He will be very classy with him and very helpful. He won't see him. He won't put the blame on him. He'll put it on the Packers.
Right.
And I would expect Aaron Rodgers to do what all these great quarterbacks do. Tom Brady does this. They all do it. They use any little slight, perceived slight, as motivation. And I would expect Aaron Rodgers to have like 950 billion passing yards next year and 40,000 touchdowns. He's going to use this as a way to motivate himself, thinking the team is trying to get rid of him.
So I was having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday who said to me, this is not the draft for the 2020 season. This is the draft for the 2021 season. There's not going to be a 2020 season. You're crazy if you think there's going to be a 2020 season. This is a question that you have to deal with all the time, and I know you're feeling about not being able to move forward without a vaccine. Do you think right now, as you sit where you sit, which may be on the toilet, do you think right now, Freeman, that there will be a season in 2020?
It is not on a toilet. I think it's a really complicated question, and there's a bunch of different layers. But I would, what the NFL is going to do, the NFL is going to try as hard as it can and force a season down the throat. They're going to really try and hammer and get a season going. You see, Roger Goodell's been laying that groundwork. He's saying the season's going to start on time. They really are going to push to have it. The issue is going to be they don't have any power in certain places. Really, the governors will decide this. If the governor of California says you're not having football this year,
right,
what do those teams do? If the governor of New Jersey says that, the governor of New York says that, it will force the NFL to scramble in ways that they may not be able to deal with. So if I had a guess, I would say the NFL will have a season and they're going to move teams all over the place and they're going to move teams to friendly red states and cause massive chaos and massive disadvantage with the team. Some teams will have to move. Some teams will have to do some crazy stuff. But my guess is they're going to have a season because the NFL is going to push it and want to have a season, and they have a president who wants to have a season.
Okay.
So my guess is they will. I don't see how you could safely do it. I think that's what your friend told you. I think the crux of what your friend is getting at is how do you do this safely, protect the players, and you can't. That's the issue here. Like, you really won't be able to protect the players and keep them safe. You won't be able to do it. The NFL will say that they can. They're going to try, but you really can't do it.
All right, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit, and I'm going to say, as somebody who's done sports my whole life and who was paid to go on TV with Wilbon and talk about sports, I am so grateful to Tom Brady for the last 4 weeks of my life. I am so grateful that he took his time and then signed in a place that I didn't think he was going to sign and then brought Gronkowski on in the middle of last week. Freeman, you must feel the same way, that Brady is a godlike figure for getting us through a full month of this.
Well, he's a godlike figure, period. But yeah, I mean, he's done, Tony, I'm sure you feel this way. You've done this for a long time and done it incredibly well for a long time. How sports can sort of rescue us at times.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a little bit corny and false. In this case, it really did provide a distraction of sorts from just the misery going on, and he was part of it. It was just fascinating watching this guy who has carried this franchise to heights that no one will probably ever reach again, go to the Bucks, and then drag Gronkowski with him. I mean, it's crazy when you think about it, but it was really entertaining and fun. And I think it's just beginning. I mean, what he's going to do there, I think, just in my opinion, is just he's going to transform them. They're going to go to the Super Bowl. They're going to be
When Gronkowski aligned with him a couple of days ago, And Wilbon said to me on the air after I said, this is a total game changer in football, and they can go to the Super Bowl, and Wilbon said, oh, he's not, Gronkowski's not nothing left. You're over-exaggerating this. I don't think I am, Mike. I don't.
I don't think you are either. I love Mike. He's one of my heroes, but Gronk still has a lot left. I mean, he sat out all last year, and he's around 250 pounds. He's going to put on some weight, and he's still very, very effective. I think a lot of it with Gronk was I think Gronk just wasn't happy playing football in New England, and now he can go out there and he can do all the stuff he does and not have to worry about Bill Belichick yelling at him.
I think that
was one of the biggest things.
Yeah, we're not going to knock Bill Belichick. He's one of the greatest coaches of all time. We're not going to knock his methods or anything like that. But it is also an inescapable conclusion that both Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, who quit at one point, didn't want to play the New England way anymore. And it leads to this question, and it is the same question that I have when I watch the Jordan documentary, which is why did Jerry Reinsdorf allow Jerry Krause to, in effect, fire Phil Jackson? Why did Robert Kraft side with Bill Belichick in this?
You know how I feel about Bill Belichick. We've talked about this for years. He's the best to ever do it. I have tremendous respect for him. And the answer to the question is just autonomy. Robert Kraft has given Belichick complete, total autonomy over football operations, mostly. There's certain things, like if Belichick tries to sign a certain player with problematic backgrounds, like that's something that Kraft has stepped in. But with these types of decisions, he always lets Belichick do his thing. I don't know if it's contractual. I don't think it is. I think it's just because Belichick's been to 5,000 Super Bowls, and they've built this relationship where Kraft lets him do what he wants to do with the football operations. And even when it comes to this, even when that happens, that's what he does. He just lets him do it. And in Kraft's view, obviously it's worked incredibly well, so he's not going to try and change it. I'm still surprised. I'm thinking you are too, that Kraft let it happen.
Yep.
I'm still shocked about it. But there's also, Tony, I think we're leaving out a key part of this. I think Brady also felt it's time to go. It may not have just been about what Kraft allowed Belichick to do. It's also in part about what Brady wanted to do. And I think Brady, like Gronk, just felt, let's just get out of here and just do our own thing. And that's a big part of it. I mean, it doesn't seem like it as much, but that's a big part of it. Brady wanted to chart his own path and do his own thing away from Belichick, who I'm not bashing, who I have great respect for and like. But he's, you know, you go around Belichick, he's been around Belichick for 20 years, and that can be grating. And he wanted to go to do his own thing in a place where he can set his own course. So that was part of it, too.
Freeman, thank you so much for being on. Stay safe. We'll talk soon.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
Mike Freeman, boys and girls, a Bleacher Report. We will take a break. David Aldridge will join us, and we will talk about the Redskins part of the draft and the Michael Jordan documentary that David is in. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Happy that Michael is here to do this read.
I've graduated from my basement up to the dining room table. Maybe next time I'll do the four questions for you. Okay, so we all know how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? It's just not the same when I can't stare at Nigel across the desk as we talk about the internet read. But here's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. Now that so many of us are stuck at home, it's only a matter of time until you run out of stuff to watch on Netflix. So this week, why don't you try using ExpressVPN to binge Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, available Netflix, Australia. It's so simple to do. Just fire up the ExpressVPN app, change your location to the UK, refresh Netflix, and that's it. See, ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. So just think about all the Netflix libraries you can go through. Hope they open up the borders for this. Love anime? Use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix and be spirited away. I see what they did there. Dad doesn't get it. But it's not just Netflix. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. The Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, You name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reason to use ExpressVPN is to watch shows, as it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag, and you can stream in HD, no problem. You know that locally, we're rated as having some of the highest internet in the country.
I didn't know that.
Here in the DMV.
I didn't know that.
ExpressVPN is also compatible with all your devices, phones, media consoles, smart TVs, and more. So you can watch what you want to watch on a personal device or on the big screen. If you visit Tony's special link right now at expressvpn.com/Tony, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Support the show, watch what you want, and protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/Tony.
Very, very nice, Reed. Thank you.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a song I've never heard before. This is a band I've heard of, the Rolling Stones. This is old guy radio, except it's sort of new guy radio. Nigel, you found this. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this song was released just yesterday. It's called Living in a Ghost Town. Now, I thought that they'd recorded it specifically because of the COVID-19 virus, because it plays into it perfectly. But as Keith said, he said, long story short, we cut this track well over a year ago in L.A., a part of a new album, an ongoing thing. And then when the bleep hit the fan, Mick and I decided this one really needed to go to work right now. And so there you have it, Living in a Ghost Town.
With David Aldridge's favorite band, the Rolling Stones. So
who?
Yes, the Rolling Stones. David is here. He is, in this case, sort of representing sports writers and The Athletic and everything like that. And we're going to ask a bunch of sports questions. And I'm going to start with the local team in Washington, the Washington Redskins. Everyone expected them to take Chase Young, which doesn't mean they would have taken Chase Young. I don't know if they got other offers or anything like that. What is your feeling about Chase Young, who I would just point out is the second year in a row that they've taken not only an Ohio State kid, but a kid who played high school ball in the Washington, D.C. area. He is a graduate. He's a of your alma mater, DeMatha, right?
That is correct. That's correct. He played there 2 years. He transferred from Pilate after his sophomore year. Everything that you see, that you watch on tape, every game that you see, this guy jumps off the board, right? I mean, he just looks like he is a superstar in the making. I was talking with Charlie Casserly before the draft because I wanted to, it was about another thing, but I asked him about Young, and he said, this guy is better than Myles Garrett. He's better than Jadeveon Clowney. He's better than Mario Williams. He's better than Julius Peppers. At least in college he was. So, I mean, this is a guy that you expect to tilt the field, right? I mean, he is supposed to be a dominant player in the pros and not just impact the defense, as Ron Rivera said last night after the first round, but also impact the offense because, with him on the field, there should be more turnovers, there should be more three and outs, and the offense should get more opportunities to have the ball.
So the Redskins could have, of course, taken a quarterback. They could have taken Tua. They could have done that. The fact that they took Chase Young, does that mean something specific for Dwayne Haskins? And I only bring this up because Ron Rivera has alluded to the fact we're going to have competition here. It's not necessarily his job.
Right. I mean, I would say I don't believe that they believe Haskins won't be the quarterback. You know what I mean? I think their expectation is that Haskins will be the starter going forward. They did bring in Kyle Allen on the team.
Who played for Rivera.
Yeah. Right. But that's why they brought him in, because he played for Rivera, because he's a guy that already knows the system, knows the playbook and all those things, as opposed to bringing in another quarterback that has to learn the system while your incumbent quarterback is also having to learn the system. So you want to have some continuity, and that will help in the quarterback's room. It'll help on the practice field and all those things. Let's put it this way. If Kyle Young beats out Dwayne Haskins and there's no outside factors like Haskins gets hurt or something, then that's on Haskins. You know what I mean? Like, he should not be beaten out by Kyle Allen, even though Kyle Allen knows the playbook better. So, I think the idea is We have a guy that could play the position that could start for us if the starter gets hurt. But I think, Tony, if they didn't want Dwayne Haskins to be the quarterback, they would have done something other than bringing Kyle Allen.
Okay, so and this is all very interesting because unlike other teams, we see the hand of the owner here a number of times. We saw the hand of the owner last year in drafting Dwayne Haskins, again a local kid, in the thought that maybe that would be good for the team and also sell a bunch of tickets. And the only tickets that are sold here are tickets to opposing fans because nobody cares about this particular team. Do you see the hand of the owner in Chase Young, or do you say to yourself, no, he's just too good? There's no doubt he's too good.
No, I don't think Snyder had anything to do with this. I mean, and even if he did, so what? I mean, it's still the right pick, you know, for this team. Again, you know, there was nobody. I mean, Rivera said they had three guys, and he wouldn't tell us who the third guy was, who they were willing to take it to. Obviously, Burrow was one of the guys. If somehow Cincinnati had taken Young, but he wouldn't tell us who the third guy was. But look, for what this team needs, which, you know, they still, for all the first round picks they have on defense, they still aren't showing it on the field, right? I mean, you don't see it on the field.
That's right.
So they still need to improve the defense, and this guy should improve the defense dramatically, if for no other reason. I mean, our guy Mark Bullock did a film breakdown of what Young brings to the table, and he showed a clip, and I don't know which team it was that they were playing, Ohio State, where literally the other team had three guys blocking Chase Young. You know what I mean? So if a team has three guys blocking Chase Young, that leaves one-on-one matchups for just about everybody else on the field. And, again, if these guys are number one picks, one of those guys should get home, you know, and beat somebody one-on-one and get to the quarterback or the running back, whoever has the ball.
You're right about that. We just had Freeman on. I'll ask you the same question that I asked him. Is this the draft for the 2021 season? Do you see there being a season this year?
I don't know, Tony. I mean, I'll put it this way. I mean, I think if any league is going to figure out some way to play, it's going to be the NFL. I mean, they have a certain corporate kind of power that makes it very difficult for them not to get what they want. And so, I don't know. I don't know how you do it. You certainly cannot do. You can't have 32 teams in one city and play all the games in one city. You know. So I think, unlike the NBA and unlike maybe Major League Baseball, who have kind of both had some thoughts about this biosphere concept, right, where you bring everybody in, you can't do that with the NFL. I mean, the NFL has 300 people per team, you know, when you count all the coaches and all the trainers and the medical staff and everybody that needs to be with an NFL team. You can't bring 32 teams in with 30 people each and on all the TV. You just can't do it. So they are going to be more dependent on individual cities being prepared and able to handle the requirements needed to put an NFL game on. And that's with or without fans, you know what I mean? Even if they have no fans in the stands, you're still going to need a lot of people to be together and people playing a violent contact sport when there's a very contagious virus going around. I mean, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you can possibly believe there's all 32 cities are going to be online, or 16 cities on a given Sunday are going to be online and able to host games. But again, the NFL tends to get what it wants. So I suspect they will play at some point. I don't know if they'll start right on time in September, but at some point I think they'll get a season in.
I tend to be pessimistic about the football season. I am pessimistic about the baseball season, which leaves me the end of the hockey season and the end of the basketball season.
Right.
I think those may get done. I don't know how, but I think those may get done. I love when Wilbon tells me that the only honest person is Adam Silver because he says he has no plan. And I go, Mike, he's got 83 plans. Mm-hmm. They've all got 83 plans. They just don't want to talk about them.
Right, so that's pick one.
Yeah. Do you think that either of those or both of those will get done?
I think so, because like you mentioned, they're almost done with their seasons. They were, the NHL was, I think, you know, they're usually a couple weeks ahead of the NBA. So I know the NBA and most of the teams had gotten well past 60 games, so they were all about three quarters of the way done. You know, the question is, I mean, I don't understand the great desire to finish the regular season as so many people in the NBA seem to want to do. What's the point? I mean,
go right to the playoffs. Stop this. It's nonsense.
Exactly. Yes. Just go to the playoffs. Just bring the 16 teams in that are in the playoffs and start the playoffs. You know, it's the quickest way to get it done. You know, so you're running out of days. You know, I mean, if you don't, I know this, they do not want to delay the start of the next season, right? So they don't want these playoffs to go into September, and now you don't start the regular season until the next season until Thanksgiving. You know what I mean? Because you have to give them some time off after the playoffs. So if that's the case, they have to be done by August. You know, you have to be done because you got to give them a month at least to recover. So, you know, my guess is that both the NHL and the NBA will get some kind of playoff done so that they can have some sort of resolution to the season. Now, I mean, I think they'll probably go to shorter series, at least the first couple of rounds, to try and get these things in as quickly as possible so that, you know, by mid-August, they're in the finals and they're in the Stanley Cup. I mean, I think, I don't know anything about hockey, but I would imagine that they're probably on the same general track in terms of days and possible days to finish as the NBA is.
Yeah, they'll play them all in Vegas because, as we now know, light and heat stops the virus. you're in the Jordan documentary. It was such a treat. It's one of my David Aldridge moments to see you on television. What do you think of what you've seen so far? Maybe you've seen all of it. And the overriding question for me is always this: why do you think Jerry Reinsdorf allowed Jerry Krause to do this, to get rid of Phil Jackson and therein have the seeds for this documentary?
Well, I mean, I think it's the first question. I think it's been terrific. I think it's capturing well what it was like to be on that team and to see what that team could do on the court. And Jordan's kind of maniacal obsession with competing and winning. Look, I always thought Reinsdorf kept Krause around because Krause could be the bad guy, where Jerry Reinsdorf could kind of just fly above it all and swoop in and make deals at the last minute and be the hero. And, you know, if you were ever going to construct a villain, you'd construct somebody like Jerry Krause, right? I mean, so it's easy. Now Jerry Krause brought a lot of it on himself. I'm not absolving him of blame, but I think that he was put in a really thankless job of having to be the guy to say no all the time. You know, I mean, Reinsdorf famously, even when he gave, you know, he underpaid Jordan throughout his entire career. I mean, he was 13 years in and he was making $3 million, you know. And then at the end, literally said, you know, I think I'm overpaying for you, when he had to give him the balloon payments of $30 million the last 2 years. So I don't think I think Krause was the guy who could take all the arrows, right? Take all the public arrows from fans and media, take all the arrows from the players, and be the bad guy. So in terms of why they wanted to break it up, I genuinely believe, Tony, that Phil wanted to leave as much as Jerry wanted him out. I think Phil always said that every head coach, no matter how good he is or how good the team is, has about 7 years with any group of people. And after that time, they stop listening. And it doesn't matter how good the coach is. And so I think he felt like he was probably at the end as well. And, you know, Steve Kerr said this a couple of weeks ago to us. We were doing a piece on when Jordan came back in 95, and he said the notion that they could have won 8 straight if Jordan hadn't gone to baseball is preposterous. He just said, there's no chance we would have done that.
Right.
You know, it's just too hard. People get tired of each other. They get angry with one another. You know, nobody thinks they're getting their due credit. And so I think it had just run its course. And again, I think, you know, it's like dog years. A year with Michael Jordan is like 7 years with anybody else, just because he pushes you so hard. You know what I mean? So I think that group of people, now maybe you could have, I mean, I suppose you could, if Pippen and Jordan were willing to keep playing with one another, you know, I mean, I suppose you could have coerced Phil to stay if you paid him enough money or whatever. But I just had the feeling that they were kind of wrung out, you know, just emotionally and in terms of the relationships having run their course with one another. I could be wrong on that, but I always felt kind of organically the thing had kind of run its course.
That you could use that exact same thinking as to why Tom Brady left finally and went out on his own to Tampa Bay. I mean, I'll get you out of here on this, and this is the other thing that I really don't know. Michael Jordan had the ability. He was sitting on this tape for a long time, over 20 years. He had the right to say yes or no and said no a bunch of times.
Right.
Why do you think Jordan agreed finally to have this done?
I think for a few reasons, Tony. I think, number one, the group, you know, that produced this show had done some really, really good documentaries, including the really great Andre the Giant documentary, which is just terrific. I mean, it's really well done. So these are people that knew what they were doing. And so when they came to him and they showed him their work, I mean, they're good. They're very good at what they do. And I think the other thing is that, you know, Michael is, old is Michael, 56? He's a little older than me, not too much older than me. He's like 3 years older than me. So, I mean, okay, so he's probably like 57, 58. I don't know exactly how old Michael is. You know, and I think he's at a point in his life, as everybody gets to when they're older, you start to want to make sure your life is presented in the proper context, right? or at least the context you want it presented in. And I think he came to the conclusion that, you know, I want people to understand me, you know, understand why I did the things I did and why I said the things I said. And I'm willing to open up a little bit and tell my side of it, to get my side out and on the record so that people know exactly what it was I was thinking and doing it at the time. And I get that. I understand that. And so that, I think that those were the main factors. It's just, you know, to have it on the record finally. You know, he's probably not going to ever write a book. I doubt he's ever going to write a book. So I think this was his way of saying, okay, if you guys want this stuff out there, I'll do it, but, you know, we're going to have to do it my way. There's no question that this is Michael's version of what happened, right? I mean, this documentary, as good as it is still Michael's version of what happened. It's not Jerry Krause's version of what happened or Phil's. It's Michael's version of what happened. And so he wanted that on the record and with people who could really tell a good story. I think it was a combination of those two things.
I have the first six episodes. I've watched the first two, as everybody else has. And I said this the other day on PTI. Michael Jordan is insanely charismatic. You forget, David. And it's really, when you watch him on the court, you go, oh my. Whoa.
Yeah.
You know,
so. In every way. And he's like, I told somebody the other day, he's like a black hole. And what I mean is wherever he is, all the energy in the room goes to him, all of it, you know? And so it's amazing. It's still amazing to see how charismatic he is.
Thank you, David. Talk to you soon.
Okay, Tony, thank you.
David Aldridge, boys and girls, we will take a break. We will come back with email and a jingle. We have a new jingle by Joe Arrow, which is very, very nice. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Quarantined all alone, but now I won't go out without my gloves. I'm scared to death and wearing gloves, 'cause of COVID-19. When I get home, I'll trash these gloves. Next time I'm gonna need new gloves.
Joe Arrow. That's just so good. It's just so good. He's such a great singer, and he, it's the Elvin Bishop song. He did such a great job. That should do it for us today. But before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, come to the window, Beato. Come to the window. That's from Help, which I've only seen 400 times. Thanks to our guests today, David Aldridge, Mike Freeman of Bleacher Report. Thanks as well to our sponsors, ExpressVPN, Michaels Reed, and Bespoke Post. And remember that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review.
Quick plugs before email, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So our friends at Johnny O have a new promo code, TK Home. We'll have something later in the summer, hopefully for Father's Day. But don't go crazy. Be mindful of what you're ordering. But if you need something, use the code. And also, Rob Kolpian, he's deemed essential. So if you need a wine glass because you're running low and tired of who's in your house, go to shop.tonycornizershow.com.
It's been so long since we've mentioned those things. Thank you. From Trey Watson in Lexington, Kentucky, listening to Michael's recollection of his first trip to the Masters, Augusta National in 2004, brought back my first memory of going to the Masters, which was that same year on the same day. In 2004, I was actually living in Augusta and lived, as my father used to say, a four iron and a strong wedge from the front gates of the National Club. We were supposed to only go on Friday, but after a lengthy rain delay on Thursday, we were able to get the passes early and were surprised and excited to get to watch a little golf when they restarted play late in the day. We followed Jack in a gallery consisting of me, a friend, Jack's wife, and one of Jack's sons. It was amazing listening to Jack and his family joke as he walked the course. On Friday, Michael said, "You both watched Arnold Palmer tee off on one." I got to see Palmer tee off on 18. In fact, the videos of it, you can see me standing behind him on the wide shot when he hits it. It was a magical year for the Masters, and watching golf simply does not get any better than watching it in person at the National Club. Thanks for the podcast during this season. They're a welcome distraction. My wife is a hospital physician, and I'm spending my days trying to be supportive of her working from home and trying not to murder the 3 and 5 year old clones of me living in the house. You never really know how annoying you are until you're trapped with tiny exact replicas of yourself for an extended period of time. From Ashton Wingate in Brooklyn, New York, dear Dr. Ron, now that I have heard Michael utter the phrase, "Grace your nethers," I cannot unhear it. Thanks for making my home quarantine that much more of an unforgettable experience. From Stuart Berman in Bethesda, my son Daniel was born just a few weeks after the original show debuted on 570 The Team. He's literally been a little for life and has a prized photo from Chatter on his phone. Like you, he's now a doctor, a resident at the Einstein Montefiore Hospitals in the Bronx, who recently recovered from his own bout with the virus and is back treating COVID-19 patients. Wow, if you could spare a moment, could we have a shout out to Dr. Daniel Berman and our gratitude. And our gratitude. From Richard Lewis in Ashburn, Virginia. Are we still doing the thing where we email about our encounters with famous people? Or was that 5 years ago? Time stands still these days. Your discussion with Ron Darling about the 1969 Amazing Mets reminded me of an event from my childhood in Dayton, Ohio. A new family moved in a few doors down from my house, and the son was a couple of years older than me. He came over to introduce himself one afternoon when I was throwing a baseball with my dad. He introduced himself as Skip, with a last name that was familiar, but I couldn't quite place it. Turns out my new neighbor was Skip Clendenin, also known as Don Clendenin Jr. He couldn't have been a nicer guy, and the same was true for his father, who I came to meet a few weeks later. Don Clendenin and Art Shamsky split first base for the Amazing Mets in 1969. From Mike Anderson in Lebanon, Ohio, a listener since my days as a board op at the great WKRC in Cincinnati. When ESPN Radio first started, I have a TK sticker on my truck and a Chatter t-shirt in my corner curl cabinet. It's funny. During your last pod with Ron Darling, you summed up my love for baseball with this phrase, Seaver and Kuzman and Matlack and Gentry and Ryan and Cardwell and aha, my childhood. I mean, that's my youth. I could feel your youthful enthusiasm in that moment, and I could feel fine. Bench and Morgan and Concepcion and Griffey and Geronimo and Perez and Rose and ah, that's my youth. You had that. You perfectly described why I love baseball. Thank you for keeping on. Love the show now more than ever, and we need it. From Ricky Herb, or Ricky Herb, because there's an H, and I don't know if it's silent, in Little Egg Harbor, New Jersey, where I almost was an English teacher. Recently, you said you wanted us to tell you what we're doing with our lives. Well, I'm a mailman, so not much has changed. But I was hoping you could send a message out to the masses. Please don't come out to greet us at the mailbox, and especially don't send your kids. We love our customers, but we are scared just like everyone else, and we don't want to see anyone get sick who doesn't have to. Also, Dave Brown from Charlottesville can still eat it. Thanks for years of entertainment, and especially right now. From Lieutenant Commander Chris Yost, as the world deals with crisis and total uncertainty, we thank you for these hour-long shows which allow us to escape. As a Navy Lieutenant Commander working in the Secretary and the Navy staff, I have the privilege to be able to get dressed and go to work on a daily basis. While times for us are very challenging, all of us in the office wanted you to know that you continue to give us an hour break from the sadness our military and our world is enduring. Keep up the great work. We'd like to ask if the Secretary of the Navy's office could be the official Pentagon team of the Tony Kornheiser Show. Absolutely. Sure. P.S. I sat at Clyde's the week before your scheduled show thinking it was that day for over 2 hours. It wasn't the right day. My bad. Hope to meet and see you soon. From Paul Pereira in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Mr. Tony, what am I eating, you ask? Too much. Way too much. That's interesting because I'm not eating anywhere near what I used to. Are we out of time? Can I do one more, Nigel?
Sure. Let's do one more.
This is from Karsten. Dr. Ron, since there are no sports to report on, well, I suppose you could work in a shop of some kind or do freelance selling of some sort of product, you know? That's funny. Stay healthy, Grandpa. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Who's your favorite pitcher?
Max Scherzer.
What does Max Scherzer do?
Phoenix.
Who's your favorite batter?
Soto.
Soto?
Yeah.